Welcome to the Grow Strong Leaders podcast. I'm your host, Meredith Bell, and I interview business leaders who are committed to their own growth and the development of everyone on their team. If you enjoy my podcast, be sure to subscribe and rate it on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Grow Strong Leaders podcast. I'm your host, Meredith Bell, and today I'm very excited to welcome as my guest, Darcy Verhon. Darcy, welcome to my show.
Thank you.
I have to say first, let me give a big thank you out to my former guests, Scott Osmond and Jacqueline Lane, because they're the ones who introduced me to you, and I'm just really looking forward to our conversation today. Darcy is the CEO of Canada Diagnostic Centers, also known as CDC. It's an independent healthcare company with specialization in radiology and imaging. Prior to joining CDC, Darcy was the president of FYI Doctors, then one of North America's fastest growing companies. He has also held senior leadership roles at Ernst & Young, Grant Thornton, and Capgemini. Darcy's leadership is based on being a lifelong learner and a passionate coach who lives his life with gratitude. I love that, Darcy. He's used his leadership strengths to create enterprise value through scale and growth. He's the author and editor of this wonderful book that I have right here. It's called The Freedom of Constraints: Turn Obstacles into Opportunity. And that was written, and he's also got 29 co-authors, including Marshall Goldsmith and other members of Marshall's group of 100 coaches. Darcy was a founding director of the Calgary Homeless Foundation, and today he serves as a director of Home Space Society, a nonprofit focused on eliminating homelessness. Darcy, I really admire your work in that area. What I want to do in starting, because you spent a number of years at FYI Doctors. And when you went there, things weren't that smooth. You ran into a number of projects, I remember you telling me. So take us on the journey to your work there and what you learned along the way.
Wow. You know, what I learned is probably a book in itself, or maybe a couple of books. But, you know, to set the context, you know, it's an organization of optometrist doctors who had a vision, and a large group all came together at once to create and shape how eye care is done. And you know, I joined not that long, just after the fifth year of the organization, so it was still really in you know, being formed in its foundational stage. When I first joined, I joined as chief operating officer. I didn't have a job description, had no budget, no direct reports, and you know, so I was given the challenge of you know, of leading with influence, more so than, you know, having direct authority or accountability or a budget per se. At the time, the CEO had 21 direct reports, and you know, it wasn't super structured, and everyone was involved in everything, and big aspirations, and you know, total can-do spirit. And really, you know, we talked about it really being like an airplane that was already in flight but still being built. you know, week or two in, you know, I learned that we had about, I think, just over 90 projects at the time, and we hadn't actually finished a project. And the desire at our planning meeting that happened, I think, on my second week, we wanted to winnow the number down to a smaller group. Coming out of the workshop, we went from 90-some to 126, you know, because we had big dreams. And, you know, I'll tell you, you know, over that first 6-7 months, you know, one of my core challenges was trying to narrow the focus and to provide clarity on what is the plan and how will we measure that. And so I did that with the team. So this is a total team effort, certainly not me on my own, but in conjunction with the team, and we took took that 120 plus projects and really narrowed it down to 11, and actually built a little mini roadmap for each of the 11. And with that, we set milestones quarter by quarter for the next year. When we first met, I was telling you about the end of Q1. And if you're okay, I'll share that right now.
Yes, I would love to have you share that story.
Sure. Well, I'm a reasonably, focused, results-driven person, I'd say, and somewhat competitive too. And we got to the end of Q1, and I learned that we didn't achieve all of our milestones. So all the things that we set out, and in fact, a couple, we downright failed at. So I, went to the chair, sat down, and I'm doing a review of how we did. And I said, look, we didn't do this, we didn't do that. So we had misses, we're going to try to catch up. And I remember the conversation. It was something along the lines of, well, did you learn something? And I replied, yes. Are you going to do it again? No. And then, did you really think we were going to achieve all those things? And I said, well, absolutely. We wouldn't have put them on paper if we didn't think so. And the reply back was, well, if we had achieved them all, we probably didn't dream big enough. So it kind of set the stage for, how to think about things. And then, the last area was there were a couple things that, were complete busts. And, we talked about that as well. And, really created a foundation where it was okay, not to succeed as long as we were trying our best and, working as hard as we possibly could. So, that's early days at FY Doctors.
I was just thinking about how fortunate you were to work with a leader who had that response. Because it would have been, I would think, very different for you if he had lashed out or expressed disappointment at what you didn't do instead of focusing on what you did do. Were you consciously aware of the fact that he was responding in a positive way, to what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say that just the whole culture of the organization was such that, and because I think it may be in part because it was so new, and we were trying pretty bold things everywhere and in the organization, and so I'd say somehow we managed to have everyone of the mindset that, we had patience, I guess, and. So something else that emerged and we nurtured was a concept of a coaching culture as well. And when you think about coach and that kind of mindset, it's not just about the performance, but it's also about being paying attention to the individual. And we added something and. We borrowed this quote actually from Marshall Goldsmith, and it's help more, judge less. And something that that I tried to reinforce with the organization kind of was that concept. And another way to even say it would be hard on the issue, soft on each other. So we worked really hard, and as a leader, I tried to reinforce some things that. Promoted psychological safety, if you will, promoted a can-do spirit, promoted a learning mindset as well. So I'd say, I think it was everywhere, and we all contributed to it in our own way.
I love what you were saying about developing a coaching culture. I know a lot of organizations are striving for that these days. What would you say are some of the key elements that need to be in place in terms of the thinking of the leaders themselves, the people they're, and how they're going to approach coaching someone else?
Well, like really, like I'd say the first thing is like when we started, so this is back, 10 or so years ago, when we started just I think the concept of like an internal coach, wasn't that, It just wasn't mainstream. So when we first started talking with our managers about them being coaches and not bosses or managers, but coaches and leaders, it was a difficult concept for people to wrap their minds around. They said, "Well, what does that mean to my resume? No one's going to know what I'm talking about if I'm a practice coach. What is that exactly?" And so we spent a fair amount of focus on ensuring that we all had like a common understanding and a common language around, what does being a coach mean? And there are different kinds of coaches. There's different approaches to coaching. And we took time and we refined it so we had our own common language. And then we were able to link it back to something else that was super important, from a coaching perspective, I believe, is that linkage to, the patient or end customer. And so what are the behaviors we're trying to coach? How do they in turn impact the experience and overarching brand DNA? So there are a lot of things that we're trying to all interconnect so that it all made sense. But I think the key thing is, what's that common language, common understanding? So and it took a while, but we got all of our doctors and our team and leaders all through the same coaching training. So we had that baseline. And the one of, I think one of the most important things, and if you think about it, I'm in healthcare today and was before. And in healthcare, you think about the hierarchy and kind of tradition. And like doctors are in a very special place, through their training, education, experience, and just the standard of care that that they own and own fully. And I'd say having a coaching culture just allows for the doctors to be a more integral part of an entire team or ecosystem. So it breaks down some barriers, and I think it opens up doors to actually enable the practice of patient care to even be more robust, because it improves the dialogue, improves the connection, improves even our desire to seek feedback. Whether you're a doctor or clinician or administrative support staff, all seeking feedback and trying to find a way where you can work effectively together. So I'd say that common understanding and language sets the foundation to be able to actually implement and fine-tune and build a coaching culture.
I'm going to take a guess here about some of the elements that were involved in the coaching, like listening and asking questions, because both of those are skills that would also definitely transfer from the practitioner to the patient that they're dealing with. Are those two of the elements that were a key part of the coaching?
Absolutely. And it's an area, listening. I have daily questions, things that I'm aspiring to personally, and one of them is, did I ask powerful questions? Another one is, did I demonstrate good listening skills? And part of what we tried to train in our coaching approach was, those very things. So.
That's great. Well, I would love for you to share some of the other experiences, one in particular that you had talked with me about before, the impact of the CEO not being present for one of your key meetings.
Well, I mentioned that there are 21 direct reports, and I became 22, I guess. And once a month we'd have a get together, and we focus on leadership, and the CEO would bring in a book and we talk about what it meant and everything like that. And early on in my leadership, we start to work on what we ended up calling leadership aspirations. So that this was how we defined culture. And so it was a collaborative effort of everybody. And the whole team was providing input, and we're working on it over a course of a few months. At this particular meeting, the CEO couldn't attend the meeting and said, you know what, you've got this. I think we want to keep momentum on this going forward. So, you lead the workshop, and and then hopefully we can get it to close to final state. So I get to the workshop, and lo and behold, the five of the senior most members of the team didn't attend that workshop. And everyone else is kind of looking around and going, well, we've got a whole host of key people aren't here, and we're our job is to talk about culture. And so I took it as an opportunity to reinforce the culture, so rather than make anyone wrong or call someone out, I signal to the team that what I would do would be to check in with all five people and talk about what's their desired impact as a leader, and how does not attending like an important meeting like that, like what does that signal to the team? And I didn't realize, but the unspoken culture at the time was, if the CEO didn't show, generally the meeting was more optional, than that was the culture. So, when I called the first person, they were kind of surprised that I called, and I said, you weren't at the meeting, just trying to understand, kind of why, how is it that you want to show up as a leader? What do you think you signal to the team? What norms should we actually have? And it was a hard conversation, and also important in that it signaled that that this is serious, and that coaching is not just kind of feel good. It's also giving meaningful feedback and helping people understand their actual impact by their behaviors. And at the end of that, boy, like the impact was profound in that it changed behaviors where, we all then started, if we needed a personal day or we're going to be late, rather than checking in for permission, we were keeping each other in the loop as to what was going on. So like we the like the engagement and our level of respect that we had for each other by our behaviors after those conversations was, I think, very significant, and it helped build trust. And we reinforced through our behaviors the kinds of leaders we wanted to be. So tough situation, hard conversations, and just a really powerful impact as a result.
No, it reinforces the importance of having the courage to have those conversations. And I'm curious, when you approached each one of those five individuals with the questions that you asked, did you have any defensiveness or pushback, or were they open and curious?
I just going from memory, I'd say surprise. I remember surprise and some silence, I would say. A little bit of defensiveness, in that they let me know that generally if the CEO didn't show up, that it wasn't mandatory. So I didn't appreciate the unwritten culture at that point. And
Well, it sounds like it was such a great learning opportunity for everyone to, as you say, it really brought you together and clarified what really was important in terms of a core value that I it sounds like everyone adopted.
a couple of folks didn't make the journey, and because it like not every culture works for every person,
Yeah.
and unfortunately, as we evolve the culture and really built on that coaching mindset, like it didn't work for everyone.
I think that's such an important point for us to realize that when we embark on a specific direction and we're adopting new behaviors, new ways of being with each other, that not everyone will necessarily get on board. And that's okay because it ends up, and I'm guessing it did in your case, with a stronger team that's left intact. that those were people that were naysayers or just, I'll call it negative energy that wasn't helpful to pursuing the goals that you all had set.
Absolutely correct.
And so I know this whole thing of connecting with others is really important. And I would love for you to talk a little bit more about that because I think that's a core value of yours, connecting as a way of building the culture.
It absolutely is. And like for me, from a leadership perspective, something that I'm working really hard at. And like I want to be the best example of working together. And I believe by saying that and working on that, I'm signaling to everyone that if I think it's important, it's probably important for everyone. And I've learned a bunch of things over my entire career, and I've got example after example, but a couple come to mind. And I'll if it's okay, I'm going to share one, and I'm going to build on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in my last role, we had a concept we called the 10-10 commitment, and what it was all about was, we asked our doctors to come in 10 minutes before their day started and spend that time just connecting with the team. So being in the team space, how are you doing? Just really all about the person they worked with and not about the company or them. And then at the end of the day, spending 10 minutes to say, thank you, how was your day? Checking in and tying a bow on the day. And at the time, we had about 450 doctors, I'd say, something like that. And what we did is at the same time, we implemented a 360 approach for our doctors, and we were measuring team behaviors of the doctors. So we had, the front desk people, their peers, everyone on the team provide feedback on team behaviors. And we also measured a couple of things. And one of the things we asked about was the 10-10 commitment. So, did the doctor, like never, sometimes, always, a behavioral continuum, the 10-10. And of the 450 or so doctors that we had at the time, 28 were ranked as always doing the 10-10. Okay. Then we start to just peel that back. Well, what did that mean? And we learned that on average, all of the doctors scored about 60% on the team scale. So they were about 60%. So passing grade, not excellent, but passing. And then for the 28, they were just over 80%. So a full 20% higher on the team behaviors. And then we start to look at employee engagement, patient net promoter score, conversion rate, same clinic growth measures, like all of the metrics. And we saw across the board that there was a positive correlation between, the team score, the 10-10, and the overall impact that the clinics were ha having. So I'm really new in my current role, and I've shared that example here with and I shared it initially with our lead radiologist. And I saw him write down on a piece of paper 5-5. And so I asked him, I said, what's that? He said, well, I'm not sure I can do 10 and 10, but I'm going to give 5 and 5 a go. I'm going to try it out. And just interestingly, a number of days later, I was meeting with the leads of all the our admin. We call it admin, but really it's the front office and initial patient interaction. Meeting with all the admin leaders, and I was talking about the importance of connecting with a patient, and how what it means right when someone walks into the clinic. And one of the leads says, were you talking to the doctor at my clinic? And I said, well, yes, I was. And she said, oh my God, a couple of days ago, I saw he was walking around the clinic with his coffee, and he's saying hi to everyone. And we were all kind of surprised, like, what's going on? Because it was clear that he was intentionally reaching out to connect with everyone. And she said, we were a little anxious at first because he hadn't been doing this before. And I asked, well, did he keep doing it? And she said, yeah, he's been doing it every day. And it was, at first it kind of freaked us out a bit, but we really quite like it. And, we're having a bit of fun with it now. And so I followed up with the doctor and I said, like, you're just really curious. Like you took this to heart, you're implementing it. How's it going for you? And he said, well, at first it was kind of awkward. And but he said it felt like it was the right thing. And he says, and I've adapted it and I've given it a whole new name. And I think I'm onto something, and he said, I don't always get in early and I can't always stay late. So what I've committed to is at some point during the day, I'm finding 5 minutes and I'm taking that 5 minutes and I'm walking around, I'm connecting and I'm saying hi. Or if I know one of our staff has done something really great, I give them a high five. So he says, I'm calling it the HI high five. And it seems to be connecting, or at least it's capturing people's imagination. And I've been talking with all of our radiologists about, what if at CDC, we tried something like that, and then saw and talked about, what impact does it have? And because I'm convinced that, if you're like it's the power of the relationship, and if you're not talking, like how can you have much of a relationship? And kind of being intentional about just 5 minutes, it can actually change everything. Because you'd be surprised, what you learn. And I know I don't do it every day myself. So full disclosure, I'm not expert. Walking around the office here the other day, I learned that one of the team, had a death in her family, the week before. And I wouldn't have known it if I hadn't walked around. And, just to create an opportunity for me to check in and say, are you okay? And for me, it just felt good that I had awareness of what the person was going through. And it just enabled me to have an opportunity to show that I cared, not. Don't know what the impact is. Can say that it felt like the right thing to do, and it also felt good. So.
Such a powerful example. Every one of my listeners can think about how can I connect more effectively. I love the 10-10 and the 5-5 adaptation. And just the high-fiving, is a very powerful way of connecting with someone. It affirms them, And to me, because a core value of mine, Darcy, and I know it's of yours too, is that every person matters. And so when we can convey that to the people that are in our world in some way, they feel that.
Oh,
And
yeah.
that's where you get that additional commitment, the engagement, those scores being so much higher from those doctors back in the previous arena that were really committed to doing that. And people sense that. And when they feel that you care, they're motivated internally to do more.
Yeah, well, I agree. And there's something I've seen in employee engagement surveys over the years is that one of the biggest things that people can do that creates engagement is taking the time to provide positive feedback for a job well done. Like it would blow your mind, how big that single thing is in relation to engagement. And you know what? And then, like, and you talk about it with leaders, and they say, "Well, all right, I've asked, how often?" And people go, "Well, I'm busy. I got my eyes on the task, and I'm doing all this stuff, and I just, I didn't get around to it." But just stand back for a second, and you think about that. Well, how does someone feel when they get the positive feedback? They feel great. How do you as a leader feel to give someone positive feedback? Well, you feel great. It can be kind of contagious, quite frankly. And but while super simple and feeling really great is hard. Like, people do get busy. You got lots of things on the go. There's deadlines. Maybe you got board pressures, maybe there's an angry patient or customer, and you just you forget to notice and recognize good work, but it's really important and powerful to do.
A key word you just said there is notice. When we're willing to raise our awareness and pay attention, it's what we pay attention to, right? If we're focused on our own task and we're not paying attention to what someone else has done, we miss that opportunity to give that positive feedback.
You just hit another thing that I'm still reasonably early days here at Canada Diagnostic Centers, and I signaled to everyone that I'm doing what I'm calling a listening tour. So I'm trying to get to all our locations, and being spread over Canada, it's a little tough. But I've also said to the team here that when I'm on this listening tour, like I'm paying attention to the stories that we tell, because the stories we tell define our culture. They define who we are, and I'm also being observant of the behaviors that embody, like, the way we do things around here. That in my mind's our culture. And I tell you, a month or so ago, I traveled north and to one of our clinics, and I got there a bit early. So I was there before the person I was supposed to meet. So I sat in the waiting area, with all of our patients, and I'm just sitting, minding my own business. And it was a slushy day in northern Alberta. And so when people were coming in the clinic, they were, when they got off the mats, there was some mud and slush and stuff on the floors. And I watch, one of the team, and I wasn't sure who it was. Like, not sure the person's role. Could have been a cleaning person. I don't know. But I watched someone mopping up the floor and just kind of tidying up the welcome area. And I just kind of paid attention to that. And then later on, I had a tour of the clinic, and I met the whole team. And the very last office I got to, was the leader of the clinic. And I walk in the clinic, and I'm introduced to Aaron. And I learned that Aaron was the person cleaning the floor, the leader of the clinic. And I said to her, I said, it just helped me understand, like, what caused you to do that? And she said, well, I want the clinic to be nice, and want people to feel good when they come in, because it's a clean environment and everything like that. And just because I could. Like, what a powerful story, I think. So, the way we do things around here is, no detail's too small. We chip in where we can, and we care about, the experience that people have when they come in our space. And so I've shared that story because I think it's an important embodiment of, kind of the quality of the people we have on our team and the way we do things.
Oh, it is. That's a wonderful story. Immediately, what came to mind was servant leadership. Someone who demonstrates, I'm not too good for any task that needs to be done around here. And I think that sets such a tone for everyone else. Well, if they're willing to do that, then I can do this over here or something else. It is so true. That's a Brené Brown quote, I think, the way we do things around here. She was the first one I heard say that. And I love that. It's the simplest definition of culture, and it's so true. And it spreads by what the leader does and what kind of a model they set.
I've even seen examples of radiologists going into the sonographer exam rooms to help clean up, the tissue paper that gets put over the exam. And so at all levels in our organization, I take notes. So I've got literally pages and pages of notes of these behaviors that reinforce, the way we are and the importance of patient care.
You know, Darcy, I love that you observe so much and that you are doing the walking around and also traveling around to connect with everybody that's in your different offices, because you all are spread. How far in Canada? Where are you?
Well, we're from Ontario to BC right now, so probably about 5,000 kilometers, give or take, maybe a bit more than that. So it's quite it would take you 5.5 hours to fly from our far between our farthest locations.
So that's a commitment. So thinking about all the notes that you've been taking, how do you see yourself consolidating what you've gathered and sharing that with others to help reinforce the culture that you are creating there?
I'm starting small, and I'm trying to in person do as much as I can. And right now, I'm only doing a newsletter that's well, it's just a note from me every month. And maybe it's a bit corny, but our letters, Canada Diagnostic Centers, CDC, I've coined a phrase. And culture being so important, that's the first C, and then the patient access to care is deliver care, so CD, and then operations excellence, and unfortunately cost is the only only word I can come up with, so I don't really like that one yet, but it's about operations excellence is the third. And what I've been trying to say to the team is, boy, if something we're doing doesn't have a positive impact on culture or delivering care, you got to ask why exactly are we doing it. And from that, we're trying to narrow down, well, what are the initiatives, and how do we measure, how we're doing? And then as I'm meeting with people, I'm trying to come back with examples and just reinforce some of the things that fit within that. And I was really quite excited last week. I was in Ottawa at our locations there, and I saw just even more examples, from the other clinics that just keeps building. And this is the most recent clinics I've been in, so I don't mean to forget the others, but the most recent ones, saw a number of things that had me, really inspired. And I'll share one of our new staff. She gets to do something, not she has to do something, but she gets to do something, and it's a little extra work. And every so often we see something in our scans, diagnostic scans, that is interesting, but we don't know what the outcome is. So we'll see something unusual in one of our scans, we do the report that goes to the referring physician or surgeon or whatever, but we don't know always what happened in the end to the patients. And so what our team there is doing is those interesting examples, they keep them, and then they do follow-up later to find out what happened. Like, how did it go, so that they can learn. And this member of our team, she gets to do the follow-up. And I like she's showing me the it's one of those little file connectors where you put your patient chart in. She's showing me the examples, and just you can almost see the sparkle in her eyes talking about, I get to follow up and I get to learn, and then I get to teach and share. And like those kinds of behaviors, if I believe if we're not learning, we're pretty much dying. And so that mindset, it's just very powerful and inspiring to me anyways. It gets me excited about being here. So.
And see it, those that are listening can hear it in your voice, but I can also see it in the sparkle in your eyes and your enthusiasm in talking about it. CDC is very lucky to have you there, Darcy. I think that what you're, creating there is something really special. And what you were just talking about reminds me of your book, because I did want to mention something with your book, The Freedom of Constraints. To me, when I first saw that, it's like that's almost an oxymoron. Freedom and constraints, does that go together? So I would love for you to share the story behind that phrase and why you chose to really have the whole book, all the author's contributions are around different kinds of constraints that they've experienced themselves and how those were opportunities.
Boy, boy, it started with a little bit of a debate, that I was having with one of the authors, Aishe Bursell, and she was talking about how innovation and innovation comes from constraints, and we were having a debate, and I wasn't on the same page, but as we talked, I'd say a light bulb went off, and then. It's through that conversation with her, it sparked to me this idea that, boy, like at the time we were going through COVID, and what I kept seeing was with every barrier that people faced, it created innovation, it created opportunity. Somehow we found ways to do more things with less. And in different ways, like you think about the working from home and just how organizations just turned on a dime, and somehow we managed to make our way through it. And I had on, quite frankly, had on my bucket list that I wanted to try to create a book, but not just to create the book for the sake of the book, but like to actually make a difference. And so what I did is I started reaching out to some of the coaches and said, look, you know what? I've got this idea around constraints and how they create freedom. And what if you're interested, would you be in, would you want to contribute, a chapter? And the sole purpose is, can we make a difference, for someone that picks it up? And so it's not designed to be a front to back read. You could read one of the five sections, you could read a chapter and try to make it easy so that people can cherry pick based on what's important to them. And I hope there are some nuggets in there, for people, that can help them either, it could help them in their day-to-day life, it could help them in their leadership, it could help them as, they think forward. And last thing I'll say about the book, a number of years ago, I met Harry Kramer, and he was delivering a speech on leadership. And he talked, I think it was about 40 years, he says that he's been thinking about leadership. And he started off his presentation asking us what 168 was. And, I didn't know. And it's the number of hours in a week. And he said, that's a constraint. And if you're intentional, you can think about how you use that constraint and you use your time. And he marveled at people being surprised at things that were happening in their life. And then he asked them, what they were doing with their time. And if you looked at what they were doing with their time, what they were doing had nothing to do with the outcome that they were trying to achieve. And so he would say, well, I'm not surprised that we said, I'm surprised you're surprised because what you're doing is it doesn't align with what you want to achieve. So if you're not intentional about, how you show up for a leadership meeting, you're going to be surprised at the outcome. So they kind of go in hand in hand. So every moment's a decision. And when I walk out the office, to engage with the team, how I carry myself has an immediate impact on everyone around me. And again, I get to make the choice. So, regardless of how I'm feeling or what I'm going through, I'm making a conscious choice around the impact I'm having on others, and that in turn permeates the organization. And the concept in freedom of constraints is we've got constraints, we get to decide what to do with them. And last thing I'll say is, when I look at what all the authors brought to the table in the book, I think. What's maybe is unique to that group, and I see it elsewhere as well. It's they made everybody in the book made a choice about how to deal with a constraint, and the choice was to see it as an opportunity and to find a way to get there.
Yes, I think so many of the stories that I read, they're very inspiring because they help you see this person face these challenges, and yet they took the opportunity to see the constraints that they had as a way of working through the issue and getting to the other side of it. There were a number of those. One of the ones that I found really intriguing was this idea of employees needing constraints and responding better and performing better with constraints, which, again, that sounds, oh, is that really true? I think it is. And I would love your perspective on what you see as constraints for employees being valuable.
Yeah, boy, the thing that pops in my mind right off the bat is a metaphor of you're on an overpass on the highway and having guardrails. The guardrails actually protect you. You can hit them and bang up the car, but they save you from going over the edge and really hurting yourself. So, to a certain extent, having those boundaries create a bit of a safety net. Because it signals what's okay, signals how much latitude you have. So they can be important as safeguards and provide clarity on kind of the direction that you want to go. So that would be the metaphor I'd use too from an employee
Well, it
context.
makes perfect sense. And I think it goes back to providing psychological safety by knowing what's expected so there's not chaos. And there's a structure that people can count on being in place, just like the culture being how we do things around here, how we are with each other. Once people come to recognize and understand that's what it is, it's easier to know how to behave, how to
Yeah,
perform.
absolutely. One thing I'd love to share with people, and it comes from an unusual place, when I talk with my team here, or talk with anybody, I use the phrase, "What's your 65?" And I met a person from banking that went into the arts a number of years ago because the arts were struggling with funding and whatnot. But he loved theater, and he joined the theater. And what he discovered that he maybe I don't think he knew before he got there as a leader of the theater was that what happens on the stage and what happens in the audience, they go hand in hand. And if you don't have the mostly full house, the it's harder to get the energy. And he discovered that at 65% of the house being sold as a season's ticket, the likelihood of filling the rest of the house was much greater because he had enough space already filled. He also learned at 65% of ticket sales, season ticket sales, that was enough for the business to be sustainable. So it could break even and it could fund the art. So 65% funded the art financially, and it also funded the art in the experience. And this guy, if you saw him in downtown Calgary, he'd open up his jacket and he'd pull out the season's ticket list the second you saw him. And he had a little line at 65 in it. If he didn't see your name, he would take your name and number and have somebody follow up. But what he said to everybody was, "What's the single most important thing that enables us, to do the art, sustain the business, and just create magic?" And if you think about that, in relation to your business or even personal life, and you don't need, big systems or lots of data to do this all the time. And I can give you lots of examples of, this particular guy, it's just a piece of paper, but everybody knows what's important. And so it's easy for people to see how to contribute to that. And it creates incredible focus. And, even here, we're really focused on access because, think about it. There are huge wait lists for scans and X-rays and all kinds of imaging, and we're in an incredible place to impact healthcare and people's lives by increasing our ability to see more patients with quality care, of course, and so we were focusing on one metric, and I won't get into what it is, but it's really about creating patient access. And every day at 8:01, our leadership team looks at it. We measure it, and by doing so, we're creating the conditions for success, and we're seeing improvement all the time. So I'd say, what's your 65? Not necessarily a guardrail, but it provides that clarity around where you're going.
Yes, and that's a beautiful place to bring our conversation to a close, Darcy. I love that question, and I would love for each of my listeners to think of that. What is your 65? And the example you just gave of that one metric that you're focused on and how that can cascade to everything else. So figuring out what that one thing is that can make such a big difference on all the other areas. Darcy, I love your leadership style, your who you are as a leader, how you show up. Your commitment, your enthusiasm, your clear love for what you do and the people you are working with is just so apparent. And I've enjoyed our conversation so much.
Well, thank you so much. Hope there's a nugget or two, and
Oh,
yeah.
definitely. There are many. And so I would love for you to share, how can people get a copy of your book, The Freedom of Constraints, and also connect with you?
Yeah, my goal is not absolutely not book sales. I'd like to have impact through the book. It is available on Amazon, so you can order it there. And then if people want to connect with me, I'm on LinkedIn, with my name, and I'll do my best, to connect back. I'm always open, to try to have a positive impact. If someone wants to reach out, I do my best to contribute, because I'd love to try to have impact.
I can see that. And that's who you are and who you're being. And I appreciate that. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Awesome. Thanks, Meredith.
Thanks for tuning into my podcast. Now head over to growstrongleaders.com and check out our two books, Connect with Your Team and Peer Coaching Made Simple. While you're there, download the free facilitator guide to find out how to implement our unique peer coaching system. Until next time, I'm Meredith Bell.